Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayla-Thompson.
My name's Adam Lavaz. Thanks for joining us for episode 67. And once again, mate, it's the comeback. We're back. We've made probably more comebacks this year than Joe Bugner and John Farnham combined, I would have thought. We've kind of been back and then we've gone a little bit, and then we've come back for the tour and we've gone back. And but it is great to be back.
It's great to be back. It's a long hiatus and it feels even a bit different sitting here, doesn't it, Adam?
It does.
Got to get back into our groove.
Yeah, we kind of had to sit here a little bit and have a little bit of a chat and sort of shake the cobwebs off a little bit.
That was a big pre-game speech from you. That was before. Yeah, massive.
It was a massive pre-game speech. Just grabbed a little bit of Ted Whitten and threw a little bit of Norm Smith and things. I threw a little bit of that in there and it seemed to inspire you for tonight's episode.
Yes, and look, speaking of tonight's episode, Adam, we thought in our introduction, because we've had nearly a month hiatus, probably good just to briefly mention some of the things that have come and gone in the education profession.
It's been a few.
Definitely over the past few weeks. Things that we will want to touch on quickly before we get into our episode. So if you've been following us, you may have noticed on the Facebook page over the last few weeks, we've shared the odd article trying to sort of keep ourselves and our listeners up to date. There was the Australian Education Union workload survey, one of the biggest workload surveys I think ever done in the country. The statistics were released, Adam, and obviously the union are using that to negotiate with the government.
Yeah.
Some interesting figures, 53 hours per week, average working week for teachers, which is high.
Well, it's high, but it's rubbish, isn't it, mate? I thought teachers only work from 9 or 3.30. So they must be talking out of their back pocket there. Yeah. And that's what I'm told constantly anyway.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Another one was... and look, this is quite a serious one, and linked to the workload survey was, I think, the weekend that the official stats were released, and then obviously it made the papers, Adam, was the hark back to burnout in a lot of teachers, and particularly principals, and talks of where support comes in for educators. And that was related to the really tragic death of Principal Mark Thompson Northern Melbourne.
An article that really hit home for me too. I remember talking to you after reading that one, and I was quite happy to admit that, you know, maybe slightly emotional, like reading about that and the loss and for the family and just from being a teacher.
Yeah,
there was more to it than that, but really hit home.
No, I think it was a lot of that. Yeah. I think it really hit. Having a look on social media, a lot of our PLM really reacted to that.
Yeah.
There's been lots of stuff in the media about the still private school, public school funding. Always. It's been heavy, particularly with the next agreement coming up, Adam.
Sick of it, to be honest.
You and I are in report season. Swing in report writing season. Yeah, and assessing. It's assessment week, in inverted commas, at our school this week.
We've got the assessment week, righto.
So trying to space out the tests for the kids.
Yeah, as best you can, because it's a big week. They get to Friday, you know, and it's a little bit nap planning in a way, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. And I feel for them, but I think we've planned enough sort of, you know, extra sort of fun stuff around that. But I do feel for them. It's a big week. And finally, Adam, I think we mentioned weather briefly in our last episode, episode 66. Yeah. But it had, I mean, for spring, for Victorians going through spring, it's been so up and down. Adam, there's been a mosquito plague down our part of the Bellarine Peninsula. And that's no joke. Adam, I was on yard duty last week.
Yeah.
And a young student was asking me about something that I was concerned about. What I was concerned about more was that I counted 7 mosquitoes perched on their school hat.
Unbelievable. Why the school hat?
7!
Mosquitoes can't get any blood out of a school hat, so what are they doing perched on there?
Well, I don't know, Adam, that's not the point of my story here, but that's the point.
Sorry, that's how you know.
The point of my story is it is plague proportions. I got bitten next to my nose on the top of the cheek, and I could feel it stinging just in time. I got away and I didn't get a lump, but I was worried.
They're sneaky there, don't they? But the windscreen of my car driving down is just covered in little bits of bug from driving in there. Yeah. You drive, vroom, there's another one, vroom, there's another. And they're up at our school too, which is quite a fair distance from yours. They're everywhere. I come in up in the morning, you can see them perched on the door, you're unlocking the door, and you try and open and close it really quick so they don't let any in, and they are everywhere.
Well, we know it can be an issue down this part of Victoria, and I know that it's been a very wet winter and quite a wet spring. Adam, I wonder, our listeners in Greater Melbourne, even in other parts of the country, and perhaps even listeners from overseas, who've had time, have weather like this. Does that happen? Do you get sort of mosquito problems like we do?
And if they do, is it at the same time or do they come around at different times and things like that? But lots we had to cover there, Rick, and lots that's been happening. But we do have 3 topics that are different from that we want to get into. We're going to cover a few things from some of our listeners tonight as well, which is always fantastic. So we've chatted enough to kick off this episode. So let's get going, mate.
Let's go.
So, Rick, our first topic tonight is actually covering a question we got a few weeks ago from an ex-guest of ours, Claire Piscineri, who sent us an email. I must admit, I have to apologise, because when we got the question We sort of had the idea that we wanted to talk about it on the podcast and actually sort of give it some air, and well, neither of us really got around to replying, and the podcast hasn't actually happened over the last couple of weeks. So, Claire, we send out our sincere apologies. But your question was about iPads in the junior years. And, Rick, as you would know, I know that you've spoken previously about that you've got the BYOD program as young as going back to the grade threes, which you are looking after now, I believe, and you ran an information session on. But there is obviously that push more and more to have iPads in the junior years. And apps and how it's used in the classroom is a big thing, isn't it? Because iPads aren't cheap, and parents particularly want to see that their money is being well spent. Before I have a bit of a discussion about mine, because obviously I've got one twos, your school, what's the experience that you've actually had with having the iPads or any sort of technology, I guess, in those younger years?
Yeah, there are small banks of iPads across the foundation to 2 year levels at our school. Now, I've got to rack my brain a little bit because I'm still getting used to how many devices are in the school, but I think it's around about 20? It may be 20 per cohort. So
right.
I know that some year levels, say the year ones, are workout sessions where one class can have all 20. Mm-hmm. I know other year levels have split them, so mm-hmm. there might be four or so in each classroom. So in terms of, I know Claire said in her email, didn't she, Adam, that her school are looking at rearranging where their devices kind of go. So I guess we'd like probably more information from Claire in terms of whether the juniors have any. In terms of the rollout, I don't think there's any year level where there shouldn't be devices in a classroom.
I agree with that.
I'm not 100% sold on BYOD at the foundation to prep level, but then I haven't experienced it yet, so I don't know. So in terms of my experience, I know that they are used as an extra tool in the younger years at our school, but I'm not privy to exactly how they've been used in terms of content and use yet.
Look, and it's very much the same for us. This year, we've only just started with them, and we've got the prep to two area. We've got 28 maybe sort of iPads. Oh, hold on, it might be 23. Anyway, it's around about the 23, 24 mark. And we have them across the PD2 and we've got a system where you've got to book them in, and you can, you know, book 8 and then someone else could have 8 and things like that, or you can actually book a class set. I must admit this year that it's been a teething period for us. I've really enjoyed having them more so than I think I thought I would. Having been a laptop fanboy for so long, using the laptops and things, it was the way to go. But the iPads have been really good for my kids. And in terms of apps, you know, we've really concentrated on apps that we've known before. We've got, you know, Literacy Planet, we've got Mathletics, we've used things like Spelling City. We've tried to add things on there that the kids can use, but it becomes quite difficult. You know, we've tried to steer teachers away from just going, well, that looks like a good app, I'm going to put it on, because then, you know what it's like, the iPad gets completely clunked up with apps, and it's really hard to flick through them.
So how are you using, because those three you nominated, we've got Mathletics on our devices.
Yep.
I would classify the three of those as kind of consumption apps.
Yes, definitely.
And this is probably a question I know that Claire was asking, and you've moved on to it nicely, about the apps being used and the benefits. I know in the BYOD program, we're working really hard at getting apps downloaded for the students that are creative-based. So they're tools, like Explain Everything. Yep. They're kind of tools that they can use to produce some sort of learning. I think there's a place for Mathletics. I think certainly we're using it as a backup to set some kids' work for home learning and things like that. But I guess, and that's the big question, particularly with the younger years. How much is consumption and how much is creativity? And I really think we need to be pushing towards that creativity.
I agree 100%. I think the apps for us at the moment is more based on that consumption. I think when it comes to apps, it's really hard to find worthwhile apps. I think you would actually need to have someone or a small team in the school who are dedicated to doing some research, doing some professional development, actually going away on their own iPad or taking one of them home and actually going, look, we want to do some spelling. What's an app that's not consumption that's going to really support their learning? And actually going through and downloading 10 and putting them all on at once and then actually testing each one and going, no, that's pure consumption. It's not going to help, delete. You know. And then once they've found one, it's actually doing their own PD on it, learning about it, and then bringing it back to the staff team.
Well, it's all out there, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think someone could, you and I could sit down tonight and do that with our devices. Mm. We know that there's so much stuff on the web. Mm. You and I are members of PLNs. You would find a lot of that out within minutes. Mm. Maybe not 10 apps, but you definitely get one or two immediately like that if you put a message out to Twitter. Time is an issue. I think, you know, you need people who, unfortunately, with the stuff like having devices in the classroom, you need educators who care about it. Mm. because leadership can care about it, but then once the devices are in the classroom, it's sort of up to the teachers.
Yes.
I know that we're going to have a big push again early next year for really getting staff galvanised about the use of the devices and not being afraid to use them more often as a tool for that creative-based stuff. And I'm really looking forward to it. As you said, I've kind of been thrown the gauntlet of running the BYOD program since our old friend of the podcast, Nigel, has moved into his new position in Melbourne. I think benefits, just moving on to Claire's last point, she said, what are the benefits of using iPads over other devices? Now, this is where we might need to get some other listeners from other schools around the state.
Yeah. But
the main thing that our technicians talk about, Adam, is that the iPad, which I find fascinating, the iPad is much more reliable under the department's network, the EduStar network, which is fascinating because with the laptops, the Windows machines tend to work better, according to the techs, than MacBooks. So it's really interesting that iPads are better. Now, I'm sure there are listeners who know, who probably would argue with this, and we'd love to know, I'd love to know other people who have things like, whether it's Google devices and things like that. But I know that mainly the iPads, for the variety of stuff you can get on them, and also for the ease of use under EduStar.
I would 100% agree that they are much easier to use. I find that particularly my grade ones, they're easy to use because they're more reliable. The kids turn them on, away we go. You know, they can't do anything in the app store because we've got that covered with passwords and things, and they just need to swipe, find the app they need to do. It comes up straight away and away they go. They don't actually need to surf the internet. They don't need to type in, you know, a web address where they, you know, spell one letter wrong and then they're putting their hand up and, you know, Mr. Kayla Thompson, the website's not working. You've got to go through, oh no, we've actually got an E instead of an I there, Marcus. You know, something like that where they make up, it's there for them, ready to use. Yeah. We're using them currently at the moment for some research. We're actually using them as a tool to research the life cycle of certain animals and insects. And it's so easy for them to do. They're bringing things up. They're using apps. They're using, you know, Safari to go and research things. They're using YouTube to watch small videos about the life cycle and writing down that information that they can then use to present it and stuff. It's really good.
For the year level you're teaching, for we're talking, you know, the 6 and 7 year old students, I think, you know, as a quick research tool to find info to take your learning further, I think that there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, that's right. Just to wrap it up too, I want to throw this out to Claire or anyone else who's thinking about bringing those iPads in. What I would actually encourage you to do is make sure you also have a small budget, $200, $100, whatever it is, for apps. Because often you'll find the best apps, you got to pay for them.
Yeah.
The free apps will have, they'll give it to you for free. You'll have a small amount of things to use, but to really get the most out of it, particularly if it's not a consumption one, but a tool, you do need to pay money for it. So I'd encourage you to go to your leadership and say, look, if we're going to do these iPads, we're going to get apps on it, we do need a small budget in there somewhere. It doesn't have to be a lot. $100 will get you 20 to 30 apps, I would say, each year. And you wouldn't want to add any more than that, no, because you want them to specifically look at certain apps. But I would encourage you to have a budget there, so when you come across that, you've got the peace of mind to go, no, we can do that, it's worthwhile, we can go for it.
Yeah, I think that's much better than giving app lists to parents to download. And this is something you and I will talk about, particularly in the new year, next year, when both of us are kind of kicking off those programs in their different guises at our schools.
Exactly. So if you've got any feedback about iPads or any other devices, particularly in the lower years, that you've had some success with or had some challenges with, we'd love to hear from you, and we are definitely sure Claire would love to hear from you as well.
Righto, Adam, we've got an audio grab to play from a long-time listener from New South Wales. His name's Brad, and Brad, we thank you for sending this in, and let's hear from Brad now.
G'day, fellas. My name's Brad. I'm a long-time listener of the podcast and first-time anecdoter, I guess. I've been listening since you guys started along my journey of becoming a teacher. I'm a pre-service teacher in New South Wales, about halfway through my 4-year degree. And I thought I'd finally send you an anecdote because, like I said, long-time listener. First one, I guess, is that earlier this year I did my first prac, and that's a year and a half into my degree. It was my first prac. Which in itself is something to chat about, I guess. I felt that was quite a long time, and in fact I was doing it 6 months early, so my fellow classmates are doing theirs at the end of their second year, which is quite far along, I reckon, to be doing your first prac, to be first time hitting the classroom. As a mature age student, I was fairly confident that this is what I want to do, but who knows. So it would have been good to do that earlier. Anyway, I did a kindergarten class, and I was I felt I was a little bit more prepared listening to all the stories from you guys, although I was shocked to find that I took me a little while before I had to tie my first shoelace in kindergarten class. So and of course, I wasn't pre-warned about the opening chip packets for the kindies at recess. I felt you guys failed me a little bit in that, not giving me pre-warning. Anyway, that was an extraordinary experience, and has only sort of strengthened my resolve to become a teacher in my chosen career. And being the IT background, that's what I'm doing at the moment. I'm doing IT, have done since I left school, and I'm going into teaching. And being a male, going into primary school teaching, I think I've got a good head start for it. But yeah, kindy was quite an experience. And I really enjoyed it. I got really close to the kids, and I went back about a month or two later and said hello to them. Just did a bit of volunteering one day, and they were happy as punch to see me back. So that was, yeah, it was really good. And the second thing I wanted to tell you about, I guess, was just this week I've completed my test. And I guess the only people that like an anagram more than IT is government departments, and it was the land type test, which is the, I don't know what it stands for, but it's literacy and numeracy test for pre-service teachers, which I know you guys spoke about recently. Well, I did it this week, and I did it earlier this week. I did both the literacy and the numeracy portion, and that was, I guess, $180 it was, which I had to pay out of my own pocket. And also, it was... I did it remotely. Being an IT boffin, I sort of thought, rather than travelling the hours to my closest capital city, I did it remotely. So I did it online, which again was a bit of an experience in itself. I mean, it's an online exam. Even if you do it in a testing centre, you're still doing it on a computer. It's a computerised test, one numeracy and one literacy. I think I did all right, and it's probably a good basic test, although I really didn't. I think it's a bit ridiculous that it's needed, to be honest, being that the requirement is that you finish it before your last prac. So for me, my requirement is that I would pass that literacy and numeracy test, and I'll pass the two tests before semester one, year four. So I can have done 3 full years of my degree, including a couple of English units and a couple of maths units before doing this test, which, like I say, I think it's a bit silly. I don't think anyone can argue that teachers need skills, literacy skills, numeracy skills, but I think it's a bit silly. Doing it in this way, there should be, if they're saying that beginning teachers are lacking the literacy and numeracy skills, well, they've got to say, well, what's causing that? Let's not put in another test. Let's find out what's causing that, because I don't see how I would have even got 2 years in the degree, let alone 3 years, without having basic literacy and numeracy skills. Anyway, that was my experience. Yeah, great to be continuing listening to you guys.
Thanks again for sending in the anecdote, Brad. Great to hear from you, and some different experiences, Adam.
Absolutely.
Obviously, Brad touched on some elements that and some topics that we've talked about in the podcast, but let's touch on the first thing he mentioned, and that was the fact that it takes, in his course, a year and a half before you get into the classroom for your first prac. And Brad mentioned that he'd done some work before that, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, he actually said he got in 6 months early.
Yes.
If I heard that right. Yeah, so that's right. It's almost you're going in 2 years into your prac before you get into a classroom. Now, yeah. I don't think it takes, you don't have to be smart to realise that you need to be in a classroom earlier than that. And I know Deakin, for us where we were, you and I, in our first year, I know we had a week, didn't we? We had a week and then had... Yes. 5 days over 5 weeks,
didn't
we?
Right.
Where you could have a day each week to come and do. And that was really good, because I know that the person I did my rounds with at the time actually dropped out. Hmm. By the end of the year, it dropped out and went, you know what, this teaching gig is not for me, which is perfect. They haven't gone and wasted 2 or 3 years of their life. They've done the year and gone, you know what, this is not for me, I'll move on and do something else.
And we know that's changed since, where like the first year they weren't sending students, pre-service teachers into schools.
No, they weren't either. That's right.
I think what Brad didn't touch on, which I think, but he alluded to, was the fact that a year and a half doesn't sort out whether a person is ready to be in a classroom. You know, need to, we've talked about this before, you need to step over that line and get into the classroom to know that you really want to be in there with the students.
That's right. And I think for you, Brad, as well, that the good feedback we can give you is that if you go in and enjoy it and build those relationships, but not only that, but if you can actually go back, If you go back after a month or two to see the kids and they're excited to see you, I don't think you can get a better sign than that. If they're lukewarm to you and stuff, well, okay, you're still learning things. But if you go back and they're actually excited to see you, then you can go, you know what? I can do this. I can build relationships with the students, because that's the basis of being a great teacher to me, is being able to build those great relationships. And if you can do that, then you can do everything else.
Now, talking about the students that he mentioned that were excited to see him when he went back to do some extra prac, kindergarten. Now, Brad, I need you to help with this. Maybe comment on the blog or anywhere this week
or on Facebook
about what kindergarten is in New South Wales, because kindergarten here is preschool. So it's for sort of the 3 to 4 year old kids.
Yes.
And kindergarten is what you do before you actually hit school. And the first year of school here is prep, or now it's called foundation.
I believe I've got family in New South Wales, and there is no prep. I believe kindergarten is their first year of school.
Right.
Brad, you can correct me on that. I may be wrong. But
either way, Brad, I mean, that's a great baptism of fire. I mean, I think getting into that younger classroom
is
really important.
My first round was... Where was yours? What was yours?
Second one. My first one was year one. I was down the bottom early.
Yeah, I was in prep. Yeah. Prep first year at a pretty tough school too.
Shoelaces and potato chips. But I tell you what, Brad,
we can't prepare you for everything, mate.
I'm still dealing with these special yogurt... Squeezy yoga containers with the little tops on them. The year threes can't undo, Adam. So come on. I mean,
yeah, they don't even try. I mean, the worst one that I have, because you've got to open the chips, I've got to open the yogurts. The worst one I get is when someone's got a birthday and they bring in the 20 pack of Chupa Chups. So the kids are giving out the Chupa Chups.
The lollipops.
And they'll get them. And they've got a line. Mr. Lamar's, I can't open my lollipop. And I've got to open them up myself.
I'm really bad at opening those lollipops.
I'm terrible.
Where does it start?
You've got to try and twist it. And then you go to use your mouth and go, no, but they're about to have that lollipop. And you go, and after a while, I give up. No, you can do it yourselves. Yep. Work it out between yourselves.
Or take it home.
Yeah, take it home. But I get that too, though, Brad. There are only so many things that you can be prepared for. And actually, that never stops, by the way. I think even if as you go up, you still have those kids, even in 5, 6, who just can't open a packet of chips. Or they come in with a big thing of, like a big flask, and they've got the noodles in there, the thermos. And I can't open the top properly. Mate, it never stops.
Maybe it's it could just be a Victorian thing, Brad. So I'm not sure.
Could be.
The final thing you mentioned was and thanks for bringing this up, because it's been very recent in our podcast.
Yep.
Adam brought it up as a topic a couple of months back, was the literacy and numeracy test for pre-service teachers. So $180 down the drain. And
but
it was interesting you said, I mean, I found the online part interesting that he talked about, and not having to travel so far. I guess that's a benefit. But like he said, he could have got through, I mean, you'd like to think that any student that can get through 2 years of their course has got good literacy and numeracy skills. You and I talked about the different times when that test could be most beneficial. I find that an interesting time that he's doing the test.
Very interesting time.
What would happen to those, and Brad might be able to answer this again, what would happen to those students that fail?
I would slightly disagree with you and the notion that if you can get through the 2 years, you must be okay. I disagree slightly in the sense that what you do at uni, you know, if you get a pass or a credit or whatever, that has no impact on whether you're getting a job. If you're just swinging it through and getting P's and things, what I'm trying to say is...
It has an impact on your literacy and you. Like, if you've got poor literacy skills, your assignments will affect
that. That's poor, but I still think people can wing it. And if you're not doing prac until the end of the second year or wherever, you can wing it for those 2 years and get yourself through. That's what I think, and what we've spoken about, and what I talked to my sister-in-law about, who did hers at the end of her course. It should be done at the start. Do it right at the start, or offer it at the end of year 12, so they do this sort of thing and then they get it back and go, look, you've done this test, you are eligible to take part in being a doctor or an accountant or a teacher or whatever it is. And then they know. They've done that one and go, right, all right, I haven't got the requisite skills to do this. I could go away for a year and get better and come back. Does that make sense to you?
It does. Here's a thought. If you did it at that time, if you did it at the start of the course, like you said, could it? Why could it not be used? And some will laugh at this, though, like how we do testing. Why couldn't it be used as like a pretest? Now, if the results were analysed, there's some merit in this.
Yeah, there is some merit. I'm laughing because it's just the idea of a pretest.
If there's some glaring areas of the course participants that were there failing, then couldn't the uni then tailor those numeracy and literacy units of work to the things that are lacking overall?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's actually a really good idea. Actually a really good idea.
Because then you're going to come out of the course with those skills, aren't you?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. So before we do finish up, Brad, Rick's actually going to jump on the phone to Deacon now and pitch that idea. idea and see if he can make some money. But that's got some merit in that. That's what we do with the kids. So if someone's coming through the teaching course, they're great with literacy, they're great with numeracy, but there is a glaring miss somewhere in there, well, that maybe should be their major. That's something maybe they should be concentrating on.
Otherwise, what's the point other than saying, well, you've failed, you can't continue with the course? Because Brad sort of asked the question, I guess, if I fail, then what happens? I'm this far into the course.
Because would we say that to the kids? Well, you failed this test, you can't go on to grade two.
Of course not.
But anyway, I do want to say that... I'm stoked with that contribution, Brad. We're always looking for those anecdotes from our listeners, and the fact that you've stuck by us for 67 episodes speaks volumes. So thank you for your contribution. And Rick, I suppose we could say we hope it's not his last.
Yeah, thanks again, Brad. And to all of our listeners, we're always very happy to receive anecdotes via audio. So keep them coming. Okay, Adam, well, we want to keep tonight's episode within a good time frame. So we're just going to go with the two topics tonight, which means... it's anecdote time, and after a break, it's always good to get back to the anecdote, and it's your turn.
It is. It is my turn, and I've had 4 weeks to think about it, and it's been hard to think about an anecdote. No, but I want you to think about schools. They always have, every year, maybe every season, they always have one big fundraising event. Now, for us at the moment, it's Movie on the Mount. Now, some schools have their great...
Movie on the Mount.
So whether you come and watch a movie, that sort of stuff. And other schools have, you know, a fair or something like that that gets people into the school and raises money, and there's lots of things going on. Now, I want to talk about the role that the teacher plays in these days and how some teachers tend to give more than others. Now, and I want to talk about a story from about 3 years ago. Now, 3 years ago, we started the Movie on the Mount. Now, when we first started it, when we were a bit smaller... The cars, we actually got the huge big screen. It was like a drive-in movie, and people brought their cars in and got the, and they could tune in on their radio and actually then watch the movie and listen to the audio through the radio.
So the families, it's fantastic.
Yeah, families would come and do that.
So what were the first few, like Alien 2?
Romper Stomper was one, you know, Romper Stomper, you know, that sort of stuff. But it was really good. But while it was going on beforehand, so an hour or two beforehand, you kind of had... there were sections for lollies, there was you could buy things, there was a picture booth, popcorn, drinks, you know, everyone came together and bought things.
A fair atmosphere beforehand.
Great atmosphere, a little bit show-like in a way, a little bit show-like. But one of the things that happens at a school is, you know the one where the you get to throw things at the teacher and the teacher can stick their head through the thing. Now,
I hate that.
3 years ago, and even the 2 years ago, we had a little bit of a roster, and I always seem to get lumped with it. The younger male teacher... Adam will just go and do it. And 1 year I had to do it with a really bad cold. And it was these... I was wearing a poncho, had a really bad cold.
Just
and
a poncho?
Yes, mate, just a poncho to keep the clothes dry. And they were the ones where they were sponges in buckets of cold water. Mm-hmm. And I remember standing there, copping them in the face from all sorts of kids, parents coming up wanting a crack. And then I try and
some of the kids really, really...
Yeah, really wind up. And I don't care because I didn't really hurt. But then when I pulled out and kind of, the roster's going to change over... None to be found anywhere. And I wanted to keep it going because, you know, there was a line and people were paying money for it. So I just kept going. I was sick the entire weekend. I was pretty annoyed. Like these, you know, all the teachers, I don't want to do that. So I'm just going to go and do something else. And even to the staff meeting recently where they brought it up as, do we want to do that? A couple of the staff members went, yeah, that's a good one. Adam will just do that. And I actually got annoyed. I said, well, no, I'm not. I'm not doing that at all this year. I've got a store for my class to look after. That's what I'm looking after. Don't dump that on me.
Good on you, Adam. Yeah. I'm all behind you here because at a fair, at the yearly fair at our school, there's been the dunk the teacher. And that's it's throwing a tennis ball at a target.
Right. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And the teacher's sitting up on this little platform and there's a big tub of really cold water and they get dropped. It's like a big hole opens up.
Well, the things you see the clowns do, sitting and do that sort of stuff. Yeah.
I think, and look, some people will call me that, will tell me that I'm a member of the nanny state here, Adam, but I think it's ridicule. I don't think, why should we? So I got asked and I said, no, I'm not going to do it. And I stuck to my guns and I didn't have to. And I think it's unfair that you were put on a roster. I think it's a big ask. I can see the fun side, but I reckon it's degrading.
It is a little bit. And I know that there was one that came up recently about...
let's put a parent up there.
You know what they were going to do? That they brought up that they were going to do the one where you got to do the toss where they got the... like the cans. You know, you've got the six cans. You've got the tents where you can knock them over. The parents were like, should we put the pictures of the teachers on the cans?
Yeah.
And then they throw the tennis ball and knock them over. And I didn't speak, but a couple of others of the staff went, I actually don't think that's right. I think that's actually not a good thing for the teachers, then not a good thing to portray that they're doing something like that to the staff. Now, you know, we're not being a part of the nanny state, but you wouldn't do that to the parents and that sort of stuff. And anyway, have you had those sort of experiences at anything like of your school or your previous school done
Absolutely.
That sort of stuff?
There's always the ones of some people. I mean, it's a hard one with the big fair because there's always the people that step up every year, staff-wise, and participate. There are some people who are organising it, so who have volunteered, so they are always going to do more. Yep. I think if you chip in, my feeling is that I always go and do, particularly with our yearly fee, I'll go and do my role, which might be an hour or so.
Yep.
It's on a Friday night, and then I'll take off. You know, go and do my bit, because we've got quite a big staff, so we're lucky. I think, though, in terms of those, I mean, getting back to volunteering to do those sorts of things where you're getting things thrown at you, and I just think you're entitled to say no.
I agree, because like I said, I had a really bad cold, and I actually had to go home before the movie started, well before, because I remember getting out of there, someone finally took over, and the principal took one look at me and went, "You need to go home," and I spent the weekend in bed, and that cold water, being covered in cold water, certainly didn't help. And I was slightly annoyed that no one put their hand up or looked and said, "You know what, Adam, I'll look after that." No one. They all could not be found within a 10-metre radius, or even further than that. 10 metres is not very far, but you know what I mean. So,
well, I think you've really touched on a big one there, because that's a perfect example of the extra stuff that teachers do. I mean, because every school has its own fundraisers, and we even have more fundraising things during the year where, there's that out-of-hours sort of time. But, look, if you've... we'd love to hear from listeners, particularly if you have the fair, and you've been a teacher that's had to get up and cop some sort of...
something degrading,
ridicule, or degrading. Yep. In the name of fun, inverted commas.
Well, Rick, that brings an end to episode 67. It's great to be back in the chair. And what we sort of wanted to throw out to everyone is we're trying to do some more episodes before the end of the year, is that when we're doing topics, I think we would much rather do topics from our listeners. I mean, I got a real kick out of talking about things that Claire said in, that Brad said in tonight. So we kind of want to send out a bit of a call to arms, don't we? That if you've got anything on your mind, it doesn't have to be a recorded anecdote. You could just email us something or drop something on Facebook and say, this is happening, this would be great to talk about. We'd really love to hear from you, because we really love discussing things that are of real relevance to our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely, Adam. And I know some people have asked also about the best way to contact us. There are lots of ways. I mean, you can simply put a comment on the Facebook page or comment on one of the posts on our blog. But you can also, we do have a Gmail address, and it's tworegularteachers@gmail.com. And we do check it. Probably don't check it enough, Adam, actually. Yeah, we probably need to check it now. But yeah, so tworegularteachers@gmail.com. Also, Adam's calling out for topics, and I'm calling out for guests. December's not far around the corner, Adam.
Yes,
and, always for the Christmas episode, and maybe even for an episode before that. You know, if you're interested in being on the... on the show, if you live locally, or also if you'd like to Skype in with us to share some anecdotes, some stories from your experience as a teacher, let us know.
Yeah, we'd love it, wouldn't we, mate? So from me, Adam Lavaz.
Me, Rick Kayla Thompson. It's good to be back, and we are both two regular teachers.